you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Hey guys, today's show is brought to you by Heshy Socks. You can go grab some over at HeshySocks.com. They are the most comfortable kick-ass fashion socks for work or play. I love them. I own a bunch of pairs of them. I'm wearing some right now. They're great particularly in the summer because they're very breathable and they're treated with antimicrobial properties so they keep your feet smelling good. So I love wearing them, but I wear them all year round. They've made uncomfortable dress shoes comfortable to wear. You don't realize how important socks are until you get a really good pair of socks. And at Heshy Socks, that's what you're going to get. They're cushioned with stabilizing arch support and stay-up technology. They work seamlessly with any type of shoes, dress shoes, sneakers, anything you guys are wearing. These are going to be the best socks you've ever owned. They offer a variety of colors, styles. They have ankles, basics, fashion socks, everything to fit your needs. So go to HeshySocks.com and enter promo code PROBLEM30. That's going to get you 30% off your entire order. It comes out to like $7 a sock, which is a great deal. You're not going to find this quality at this price anywhere else. Stop buying overpriced socks at the mall. Stop buying socks that fall apart after a couple of washes. Go to HeshySocks.com. Let them know you're with us. Use promo code PROBLEM30 for 30% off. You're going to thank me for this one. All right, let's start the show.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens. Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders. If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now. Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
You're listening to Part of the Problem on the Gas Digital Network. Here's your host, Dave Smith.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. We have with us, of course, I'm Dave Smith, the most consistent motherfucker you know or will ever know. And back on the show after being out for Rosh Hashanah and AIDS-related illnesses, Robbie the Fire Bernstein, the King of the Cocks.
Oh, I had to pray to God for some healing.
Yeah.
You know, I thought I'd kick the AIDS and then it came back, and I don't want to have AIDS a year long.
No.
That's a lot of AIDS.
Oh, yeah. Way too much. No. Science, medicine, none of those things are going to help you now. This
Praying.
Is between you and God.
Yeah. Occasional weekend. I can deal with AIDS for a weekend.
Do you have a good time on Rosh Hashanah?
No, I got to not do them anymore.
It was bad?
It was real bad. I feel like I've reduced my religious Jew days from about 110 a year to all of 5. So I've really...
That's doable.
I've really limited my exposure. And if I told you why they were so tight, you'd be like, shut up, dude. But I don't like them anymore.
Why?
What
don't you like?
I'm just stuck in a house with all this cake, and I just keep eating the cake till I pass out. And
that's what God wants.
And it's not healthy, you know? So I like to be away from all that cake.
Yeah.
You wonder why all those Jews are fat and bald. It's because they got all these holidays, and, you know, it's like the Lord's 11th commandment was, thou shalt eat cake, or something.
There are a lot of short, fat Jews.
I'm telling you, it's all the cake on those holidays.
Yeah.
Just households filled with... Because
right.
There's nothing to do. They take away all your electricity. You're not allowed to work, so you sit around.
No electricity.
No,
yeah, you guys
it's
are
like,
serious.
So what do you do? You sit down, you have these big meals.
Drink?
Well, you can get hammered too, and it's all the same unhealthy racket.
Yeah. That actually sounds pretty awesome.
I'm going to tell you, if you were anyone else...
Unplug for a little bit.
You'd be like, this is great. It just, it doesn't
do
it for
me. Can you use a cell phone, or you're not allowed to do that either?
I mean, I'll go to my own quarters and use my cell phone, but technically speaking, there's no cell phone usage.
Right, right. Hmm. Yeah, weird people, those Jews.
Yeah.
Weird group of people.
But I feel like I repented. You know, I showed up to synagogue for a little bit.
I thought you were supposed to repent on Yom Kippur.
No, you got to get your repenting done by Yom Kippur. If you wait all the way to Yom Kippur, you're fucked, man. Those prices are going back up. It's like Christmas shopping, yeah.
Oh, man,
you don't
want to
wait
Jews
till the night before. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Okay, I didn't even realize that. No, I thought Yom Kippur was the day to do that.
Dude,
it's like I grew up Jewish, but not like you. Like, your family is like real deal.
Now, the repentance never ends. Even after Yom Kippur, they do the Marv service, and you still got to ask God for forgiveness. And then they go, well, what could you have done? You just, and then, like, you've always fucked up in the eyes of God. You did something. You thought of something. You said something to the guy standing next to you.
Isn't it amazing, though, like, in, like olden times, you could just, like, have a slave beat the shit out of your wife and be completely guilt-free about all of that.
Right.
Like, you're like, no, that's legit. But then you'd have to feel bad if you're like, I had a little bit of cheese with meat or something like that.
Well, no, Jews were good to their slaves.
Were they?
Yeah, real good. Real good. You had to treat your slave better than yourself. You got one blanket, got to give it to your slave.
Wait, is that true?
That's a law. It's in the books.
Really?
I mean, I don't know.
I thought it said a thing like, I thought in the Bible it had something, I don't know if that's Old Testament or New Testament, but it had something like, if you beat your slave to the point where he can't stand up after 4 days, then that was like too much.
Oh, and then he's got to be released?
No, I don't even think it says that. I think it was just like, it's not cool.
I don't know. That might be in there.
Yeah. All right.
There's also one if you were conquering territories and you really wanted to have sex with a chick, you know, like you're getting your pillage on,
mm-hmm.
you got to like shave her head and leave her in a room for a month first or something.
Wait, really?
Yeah, that's a weird one. There's some weird outdated laws. But we don't pillage much anymore. So, you know, that one's just kind of irrelevant.
Huh. Yeah, that one's very, very strange. Okay. So.
Yeah, we got the Jew talk out of the way. So.
Yeah, we got it out of the way up front. So, there, you know, I'll tell you, I did a little intro before the episode with Peter Schiff last Wednesday and talked about impeachment. And then I did a full episode on it on Friday. And on Monday. And I'm not, you know, I don't really know what to talk about this podcast because the big news that's going on is still the impeachment stuff. And I feel like I've kind of said what I think, at least for now. We'll see what, you know, how this thing progresses, and I'll keep talking about it as new developments arise. But so I did solicit some, topics from the Part of the Problem Inner Circle, to see what they want to talk about. And by the way, you can join, the Part of the Problem Inner Circle if you become a supporting listener of the show. Go over to gasdigitalnetwork.com, use promo code POTP, you get a monthly discount. Sign up for the show. You get access to all the shows on the network, including the entire archive of Part of the Problem. We're coming up on episode 500, which is really quite incredible.
Do we know what we're doing yet to celebrate?
You know, I want to figure it out today. I'd like to do a live show, and I think we still have enough time to plan that out and make it work. So I'd like to do a live show. I think that would be fun.
In New York?
Yeah, here in New York. And if you guys would be interested in that, you know, let me know. But I think that would be fun. Maybe just do it at a comedy club or something like that. But do a live show, have some people come out, do a thing. You know, I don't know. I'm open to ideas if anyone's got ideas for what they think we should do. But it is crazy to me that we're going on 500 episodes, and it's been, you know, it's been a long time of doing this show, and the fact that it really picked up and is like a real thing, like it's an entity now. It's weird when you just start something with a microphone in your living room, and then it becomes like a thing years later, and now you're at a studio, and there's all these people who listen, and there's money, and, you know, it's weird.
People should bring sandwiches as tribute.
To you.
Yeah,
sandwiches to the king, the king of the cocks. And maybe you take one bite of each one and tell people what you spit it out at them. You get this out of my face.
Do a review. We'll get like a big silver platter
all right,
for people to deposit their sandwiches.
I'm open to the idea. We could do a sandwich segment with Robbie the Fire. Oh, let me say also, let me actually promote something that I wanted to, because I got a gig coming up in New York that's a bit of a weird one. And I want some of you good people to come out if possible. So hold on, let me see. So I'm going to be on this panel, which is about, it's titled The Power of Political Satire on TV, which I don't, the on TV part really indicates that I probably shouldn't have been invited to this thing, but I didn't realize exactly what it was when I first agreed to do it. But it's a, the panel is me, David Cross, Ronnie Cheng, and Liz Winstead.
Who's Ronnie Cheng?
He's an Asian dude who looks familiar.
Like all of them.
That is a good point. See, they're already going to hate me. Anyway, I have a feeling this is going to be a weird show, and it's going to be probably me disagreeing pretty harshly with a bunch of leftists who, you know, despise Donald Trump. I might be wrong about that, but that's what I have a feeling this is going to be. So if some of you people want to come out to that, that would be really awesome. It's going to be at the Pele Center, and you can get tickets at, I believe, let me just check the website here. It's paleycenter.org. So go check that out. And if you can, come out to the show. I could use as many of you people out there as possible. So the entire crowd isn't against me. That would be preferable. So please come on out to that. So one of the things that was consistent in the two episodes that I discussed, Donald Trump's impeachment or impending impeachment, I guess, both before the Peter Schiff episode and on the last episode, one of the consistent themes was that you weren't here, Robbie Bernstein, and we all missed you very much. So I figured I'd ask you, curious what your thoughts are, and me and you haven't really talked about this at all, but what do you think about the impeachment?
Yeah. So first is, I think it's a little tough to weigh in on because the media made such a hoopla out of the Russia collusion thing that didn't exist, never happened, and they stuck with it to the very end.
That's for sure.
So there are aspects of this that look somewhat damning, but we still don't know who the whistleblower is. There's like so many elements here that I'm still not sure of, so it's hard to say, hey, did Trump really do anything particularly terrible here? So that's the first thing. The second thing that's just so interesting is that there was obviously some crazy shenanigans going on between Obama and the Ukraine, and that kickstarted the whole Russia Crimea thing, that they seem to have overturned the government over there for something that was a little more friendly to the United States. And then Russia said, well, if you're going to have this pro-West government over here, we're going to have to take over Crimea. And that seemed to kickstart all this Russia shenanigans. Mm-hmm. And so there are a couple things. First is, the more that this unfolds for Trump, the more we might learn about some really nefarious aspects of government in terms of Ukraine being involved at the beginning of the Trump being investigated for Russia collusion. So right. It's like, it's almost like a yin and yang aspect here, that the deeper you go in on Trump, the more we're going to find out about the deep state and the Democrats and the beginning of this whole Russia collusion hoax, which was clearly manufactured to undermine his presidency. And yeah. Ironically, they were always talking about undermining our democracy, and that's what they did. For 2.5 years, the elected official couldn't govern because he had to deal with a scandal.
Well, isn't it crazy that there was, right, like that's such a good point, that there were 2 years, the first 2 years of Donald Trump's presidency were under this cloud of suspicion about the Trump-Russia collusion thing, which turned out to be complete bullshit. He got a few months off after that's been over, and now it's under an impeachment cloud.
Yeah.
It's basically like there's just always going to be something hanging over Donald Trump. That's a very good point.
And he's also, listen, he was slick as hell because nowhere in that transcript is there anything that's clearly quid pro quo. He wraps all of his statements within the guise of, hey, I just want to make sure justice is being served. And I heard that your prosecutor got removed, which doesn't sound like justice. I'd love for you to look into that. His language is super slick. And then let's also understand, this is the game of being in power. And when you're in power, all of a sudden, the people in Ukraine, they made the wrong gamble that they thought the Democrats were going to be there. And so now all of a sudden they got to acquiesce to your will and wishes. And we're throwing money all around the world so that we can influence these people. So obviously the guy who's in charge gets to decide how we're going to influence them. So all of this is more of a picture of just how government really works than the evil that is Donald Trump.
And no, I anything, agree.
Probably speaks to the double standard of the criticism he faces, that I'm sure this kind of shit just is standard.
Oh, I'd certainly imagine that it is. But it is, you know, there's something. First of all, I'm convinced, the more and more that I look into this, that the two are related, the Russia collusion thing and this whole impeachment, because what Donald Trump had said, and he said the day after the Mueller report came out and found no evidence of collusion, conspiracy, any of that shit. And he said that he wanted Attorney General Barr to look into
The
Ukraine.
This is and these other countries. Race against the clock.
Well, that he wanted them to look into all these countries and what they had to do with the origins of this hoax. And so it seems a little bit coincidental that then shortly after that, he's on a phone call with them and this is the issue. And he did say Barr was the only member of government who he was like, talk to them. Aside from that, he was like, talk to Rudy Giuliani. He didn't want anything else going through. You know, he wasn't like, talk to the CIA, talk to the FBI.
Right.
He was like, talk to the attorney general or talk to Rudy Giuliani. But of course, you know,
they want him out of power quickly because it's clear that he's actually making some moves to unravel what really happened.
That seems to be the case. And more what's coming out is that it actually seems, and this surprises me, I'll be honest, but it actually seems that Attorney General Bill Barr was making some moves to investigate the origins.
Yeah, it looked like he was just going to not story. Really.
Yeah, I thought he was just kind of there to be the cover guy. Like, yeah, we investigated it and found no wrongdoing. But it looks like he was actually trying to investigate it.
I bet Giuliani's going to be the one to just putz it up. Because it doesn't make sense why a private lawyer is kind of mixed in with these dealings.
Yeah.
He's just going to end up putzing it up.
Well,
that's
we'll
my
see.
Bet.
We'll see. You know, a lot of these other people around Donald Trump have gone down. So we'll see what happens. This is a little bit different. It's not a special counsel, you know, investigation. And I think probably from all the stuff that's happened to these other guys, Rudy Giuliani will be very reluctant and guarded. If he does get
what
interviewed.
Happened to Giuliani, because there was a time, at least in my memory, where he was kind of a smooth guy. You know, I mean, maybe it's just because I was a kid and there was the whole 9/11 and he was the face of
New York.
I don't
know if he ever was really that guy.
Okay.
You know, look, first, age is a motherfucker, ask right. Bernie Sanders. And the other thing is just that I think he was never on the other side of this type of scrutiny. So it's easy when you're kind of the poster boy. You know, it's like it's easy to say like, oh, Obama was so smooth. He would never put his foot in his mouth the way Trump does. But
right.
What if Obama was getting pressed and, you know, grilled the way Trump is? It might be a little different. Like, here's the thing to me where I'm at with it right now. I don't know. Look, I actually could see. I said, I think, on the last episode that Donald Trump might get impeached, but he's certainly not going to get removed from office. I'm not sure I feel that way anymore. You know, the more I look at it, I go, look, the Republican establishment has always hated Donald Trump, and you might see them turn on him in the fourth quarter. I don't know. I'm sure they could bring something out that'll make it look bad, and they might find a little bit more, oh, he did this or he did that, as you could probably with anybody who's the president if you really wanted to.
Do they have a tough win from there? Because this is the tough win, is that even though the Democratic field is so bad— if the Republicans bail on Trump, they'll get nailed for, hey, we always told you that this was a corrupt asshole and you guys supported him.
Well,
what we needed you, what the country needed was for you guys to realize how corrupt he was and
I
never
don't know.
Back him.
You know, sure, the Democrats could certainly try to play that card. But I think the bigger concern is that one of the things about Donald Trump that is brilliant political strategy, the way that Donald Trump has positioned himself has been that I'm the guy against the system and the whole system is against me. So if the whole media turns on Donald Trump, as they have from the beginning, that doesn't actually hurt Donald Trump with his base because it serves as evidence that he is what he told you.
Assuming they don't actually impeach him. Because once he loses
right.
power...
If he gets removed, I mean, that's a whole different thing.
Impeachment proceedings just help him because he gets to hit the campaign trail and go, hey, for 4 years I've been trying to help you guys. You know why you didn't have a wall? Because of these assholes.
Well, that's right. In some ways, it protects him. And in a lot of ways, if the whole Democratic establishment and the Republican establishment turns against him, well, he can still spin that into, like, this is why you elected me because they're all against me. I'm here draining the swamp and they're not... Now, I don't buy into that line exactly, but I don't buy into the fact that he's draining the swamp. I think he's surrounded himself by the swamp, but I certainly buy into the narrative that the Democratic and Republican establishment and the media and the deep state all hate Donald Trump. So there is, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out politically. But I guess I would say this: here's the problem, right? And I think this is the problem that the Democrats have right now is you go, we're impeaching Donald Trump, and you go, okay, why? What did he do? tell me real quick what Donald Trump did. And there's not a real quick answer to it. You know, I've seen all these people out there who's like, he abused his power or he did this. It's like, yeah, but specifically, like, what did he do? And by the way, I saw Maxine Waters, that genius, on Ari Melbin, I forget his name, Ari something show on MSNBC. And she started asking, and he asked her, you know, do you think you should impeach Donald Trump? And she was like, yes, we have to impeach Donald Trump, blah, blah, blah. And she immediately, she goes, well, why? So they played a video of her in the 90s when she was saying this is ridiculous to impeach Bill Clinton. And he asked her, he goes, well, what's different, you know, now that we should impeach this president? And she started going off on the way he talked about minorities, the way he talked about women,
nothing that's a
crime, the way he talked about this. And you're like, wow, this is crazy that you even, you're not leading with a, this is why we have to impeach him. You're leading with, I don't like this guy.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but that's not an impeachable offense. I mean, I don't think. Here's the thing, right? The claim would have to be, and here's what the claim would have to be, is that Donald Trump threatened to withhold military aid to the Ukraine unless they dug up dirt on his political rivals. That would have to be what you're saying. Now, I'm not saying that is not an impeachable offense. I suppose it could be. There, you could certainly think that there's something fucked up about threatening to withhold military aid to a country unless they dig up dirt on your political rivals. But there's a few problems with this narrative. The major problem is that nowhere does Donald Trump say that.
Yeah, he was slick.
There's nowhere where he says anything even close to, we're going to withhold military aid. He never even talks about withholding military aid in the actual transcript. He just talks about how we help you guys a lot. And then he talks about getting to the bottom. He says, I want a favor, basically, to get to the bottom of this Russia interference, Russia investigation, how this whole thing started. And then at one point in the transcript, he throws out there, he goes, yeah, and I think you guys should look into this Biden thing. You know, a lot of people are saying this was corrupt. It always seemed corrupt to me. I think you guys should look into that. But there's nowhere there where he goes, you won't get this money unless you look into that. I mean, it's not true at all. So what? Here's the connection they're trying to make. Here's what they're trying to claim. Well, this was like a mob technique where you go kind of like, yeah, but you know, it would be nice if you did this, and you know that there's an implicit threat, and they want to make that connection, that even though he never said it, he was making this clear to them, and then the fact that months later, they slowed up, they actually withheld military aid. There's a few big problems. There's a few big holes in that narrative. Now, here's the first one, well, the one I just mentioned, right? The first one is that he never says that. You know, calling it a mob tactic.
I think it is a mob tactic, and I think it's kind of obvious what he was doing, but you can't prove it. He was very slick in the way he had that conversation, and that firstly, yeah, he started off, it was salesy. He goes, hey, we do a lot of these things for you. Appreciate that. Yeah, and you really enjoy that we do those things for you?
No question to me.
Yeah.
I think Donald Trump was trying to persuade the Ukraine to get to the bottom of to give him whatever information they have
about evidence. This.
And also, by the way,
yeah,
if there was anything criminal about what Hunter Biden and Joe Biden were doing, I'd love that too. Okay, but that's not enough to impeach. What you'd have to have to impeach is that he actually used the power of government in order to get them to do this. And there's a few major problems with that. Number one, he never actually says this. As you pointed out, that could just be him being slick. But you don't have him saying this. None of that's in the transcript. Nobody seems to have any evidence of that. And the other thing is that a big problem is that, yes, Donald Trump did, after that, months later, withhold military aid for the Ukraine. But what the Trump administration is claiming is that basically what he was doing with that was going like, well, why are we just supporting everybody else and not getting anything out of it? Which has been a consistent theme of Donald Trump's since he was a candidate.
Yeah.
He's been talking about what's wrong with NATO, what's wrong with foreign aid, and just from a business perspective, like, we're paying all the bills and what do we get out of this? Okay, so that's he's got an answer, whether you agree with it or not. He's got an answer for what that was. But here's what I think is the most devastating problem for the Democrats' narrative with all of that, is that if you're claiming that we all know what happened here was Donald Trump withheld this military aid as a quid pro quo that we wanted, he wanted something in return, and what he wanted was dirt on a political rival. Okay. So he wanted them to investigate Joe and Hunter Biden, or he wouldn't give them military aid. Well, the problem is that he then gave them the aid. So they first held back on giving him the aid, and then they gave it to him. So they got it, and they never investigated Joe Biden or Hunter Biden. So he, if you're saying this was a deal, well, there's this one glaring piece of evidence that contradicts that, which is that he gave them the aid after holding it back. He gave it to them, and they never did that thing. So that seems to point in the direction that this wasn't exactly what you're claiming it was. I don't know.
Also,
Now does this really matter in the grand scheme? I'm not sure. But it just, there's nothing, there's not like a simple, look, with Bill Clinton, as dumb as the reason that he ended up getting impeached was, at least it was easy to explain. You know, he committed perjury. There, we're impeaching him for committing perjury. It's a crime. Okay, you know, I mean, that's, look, the guy was disbarred over it. He committed perjury. So there you go. That's the crime. I mean, we threw a few people of Trump's, you know, Trump's people in jail for this crime. So if you could throw them in jail for that, okay, we can impeach you for that. At least there's that crime. Now, to most people, this actually grew support for Bill Clinton, and they supported him more after this because it did seem petty. It was like, yeah, he committed perjury, but over a blowjob. Like, yeah, he cheated on his wife and didn't want to admit it. And most people just went, yeah, that's not really, even if that is against the letter of the law, it's not exactly what.
It's rude to show up to court with your wife there and go, yeah, I did get the blowjob.
Right.
No one wants you to do that.
In some ways, that's a shittier thing to do than to lie. Be a decent person and lie about this. So, but at least it was easier to explain, whereas this one is very difficult to articulate quickly what exactly he did. But there also is a bigger, you know, if you want to get into the nature of how government works, and maybe this is what's weird from the perspective of an anarchist or from the perspective of even somebody who's just a small government free market guy in general, where you really don't think, you know, if you think like 90% of what the government does, it shouldn't be doing to begin with. You're like, none of this should exist. So I don't think this is how it should work. Like the way it works now, I don't think this is how it should work. But given that it does, is it necessarily a good thing that world leaders can't speak in secrecy?
Oh, man, dude, that's what I was thinking.
I don't know that that's a good thing at all. You know, Tucker Carlson made this point the other night.
But can I ask you?
Oh, go ahead.
I think there's got to be a platform by which these guys are having conversations that we don't know of and don't see.
Maybe not.
There's no way that if Obama wants to talk to, I mean, if Trump wants to talk to Putin, there isn't some cell phone somewhere where Putin answers.
I don't know. I don't know that. I don't know that you're right about that.
That just seems really.
Well, that I actually think that you might be wrong. I mean, the truth is, and Donald Trump said this, I mean, look, I don't know, maybe we don't know, but Donald Trump said before, he goes, I know every time I talk to another world leader, there's a whole bunch of spies who are like listening to what I'm saying. So he goes, of course, I'm not going to say something like that, you know, crazy like this. That was actually one of his defenses over the thing. All right, guys, let's take a quick second and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Vincero Watches. Vincero is my go-to brand for affordable quality watches. Just dropped their new Altitude collection, and we have to say it's unbelievable. They sent me a couple of their watches. They're absolutely beautiful. I love them. You know, in the watch industry, there's like the really high-end, beautiful watches that cost tons of money, and then there's the really crappy low-end watches that look like crap. But Vincero are the first ones who have created watches that make you look like $1 million, but you're not going to have to spend $1 million in order to get one. It's really incredible. They have over 16,000 five-star reviews, and that really says something. This is a company that's really pleasing their customers, and it's part of the reason why I'm really thrilled that they're a sponsor on the show. Their bold timepieces masterfully blend form and function into one affordable watch. You got to go check these out. Go look through. They have their catalog is just absolutely beautiful. And just for my listeners, Vincero is offering 15% off your entire order if you use the promo code PROBLEM15. So go over to VinceroWatches.com, use the promo code PROBLEM15 for 15% off. You're going to love these watches. They're absolutely beautiful, great for daily wear or just for special occasions, wearing to the office. You go into a job interview with one of these things, you're going to look great. They have all types of different styles and a whole bunch of different options. Make sure you go check them out over at VinceroWatches.com. Once again, that promo code is PROBLEM15 for 15% off your entire order. All right, let's get back into the show. Now, Tucker Carlson made this point the other night which is like been well known. There's lots of like documentaries and reports about this, but that the closest, you know, the world ever came to nuclear war was during the Kennedy administration at the height of the Cold War. And during the whole Cuban Missile Crisis thing. And that basically because Kennedy and Khrushchev were able to get secured conversations, they were able to avoid blowing up the world. And more or less what ended up happening, I mean, I know it came down at one point to like one, like a guy on a ship who was like, was given the order to fucking like send a nuke and didn't. And there was a, like more or less Kennedy, I think at one point Kennedy even said, he goes, even if the Soviets launch a nuke, I'm not going to retaliate with a nuclear strike privately. Like he was just like, straight, look, I'm not going to be the president who fucking ends the world. And you have to understand that at the time, nuclear power was a very new thing, right? Like we had just developed the bomb. What did we develop in 1945 or 1944? And we dropped it in 45. And a nuclear bomb had been dropped for the first time. And now you're talking about, you know, less than 20 years later, and the Soviets have a bomb and we have a bomb and we're in this conflict. And it's like, holy shit, for the first time ever, human beings have the power to destroy all life on the planet, and we're flirting with doing it. And the idea that if you have someone, you know, to this day, for all these other problems, we still have all these weapons. In fact, we have far more sophisticated weapons now than we did then. And about 90% of the world's nukes are held between Russia and America. And if, you know, this is one of the things that's been so crazy throughout this whole, you know, first few years of the Trump administration is that he's talking about trying to get along with Putin. They seem to have somewhat of a good rapport, and then a whole bunch of people around them are like, you're a traitor for doing this. And it's like, what normal person doesn't think it's not the worst thing in the world if the two heads of state who run their militaries, who have 90% of the nukes in the world, are like, hey, let's talk.
Yeah,
I would much rather those guys be able to talk than have the CIA in there fucking, you know, undermining Trump every time he talks to them.
Like, he should be able to get on the phone and be like, yo, Putin, you cool? And he's like, yeah, man, I'm cool. I gotta get out there and say some dumb shit to my people, but we're both cool here, right?
So, yeah, you just be like, hey, the Jews in the media, huh? And he's like, I know, Jews in the media. You know, that's not Russian. That was more German.
He goes, I was on board. Yes.
Anyway, okay, I don't do Russian. I'm going to bring soda in for one of these podcasts. The point is, the idea that they can speak secretly isn't the worst thing ever. And what's coming out is that, you know, like he put some of these phone calls on their like secret server or whatever, which is the same thing Obama did when he was trying to make the deal with Iran. And I found that pretty interesting because it's like, look, I'm one of these guys, and I know a lot of the more right-wing leaning people who listen to the show give me shit about this, but you're wrong and I'm right. And the deal with Iran was one of the best things that Obama did. Don't let these fucking Fox News types fool you. They go, pallets of cash on a helicopter in the middle of the night. It's like, yeah, that's how he had to get this deal done. By the way, it was their money. It was their money that he gave back to them, which we already had to give back to them, whatever. There's nothing wrong with a deal that takes a war off the table and goes, okay, here, you have your money. There's no threat of a nuclear Iran. This is all bullshit. That wasn't our money. It was their money. The whole deal was like just taking these bullshit excuses off the table. But if you have a real problem with the Obama-Iran deal, you need to reexamine your priorities. Of all the things that we've done in the Middle East over the last 20 years, we made one deal with a country that ended completely peacefully. It's a lot better than the fucking destroyed nations that are all around Iran that we're, you know, our government is responsible for. But that tells you something. It's like, well, why did Obama have to do this so secretly? You know? Like, why couldn't Obama just be like, I'm the president, I'm making this deal, and that's that? Well, maybe he needed to keep that away from some of these fucking maniac neocon CIA war hawk types. Maybe he needed to fucking keep that secret before he could get this one thing done. So I'm not completely against, you know, it's like these people who are like, it's easy to come out and be like, well, you know, it's like we're against government secrecy, so we don't want the world leaders having private conversations. It's like, yes, you're right. The CIA and the NSA who are going to spy on them, they're against government secrecy too, right? Like the most secret organizations in the government. I'm not sure I want them listening in. Doesn't seem like that helps anything.
So what's the deal with the professor guy and Ukraine kind of kickstarting the whole Russia collusion stuff?
You know, I got to look into it a little bit more. I don't know. I don't know how much they were involved in it. But what I do know is that Trump believes they were. And the reaction from the Democrats to Trump trying to get to the bottom of that kind of seems panicky. That's the thing that I focus on the most out of all of this, is that this seems like a panic move by the Democrats, because this is a very risky political undertaking. And I would think that if they were going to do this, they would do it in a way where it's like, well, look, we have this smoking gun. This is clearly going to, you know, like work, and we'll win over the public on this. And more or less what they're saying is that, well, there was one whistleblower who's going off hearsay, and we're taking his word for it, and we're going forward with impeachment. We'll figure out what's happening. And it just seems like probably, I mean, it seems like a panicked move. And what are you panicking over?
Well, and by the way, that's the part that it makes it hard to say, hey, is this an impeachable defense? Is we don't know who the whistleblower was. For all we know, it's a CNN rep. Like, you literally have no idea. And
well, we know. No, that's not true. We know that it's a CIA analyst.
Oh, well, there you have it. At least that's what we've been told. Fine. So now we know it's a CIA analyst, and we also know that he wasn't actually there for the phone call.
Well, that's right.
He got the secondhand information.
He wasn't there. He hadn't seen the transcript, and he didn't give it to Congress. Congress went through with these impeachment hearings. They didn't see the fucking transcript until Donald Trump gave it to all of us. That's, I don't know, man. That's pretty fucking strange.
Baller move by Donald, just to put it out.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly right. Anyway, it seems to me like the Democrats are, and not just the Democrats, I feel like the whole system is like nervous. And I think that once the Mueller investigation concluded, and that was lifted off of Donald Trump's head, and you would have to imagine that it was kind of like, you know, the old like swatting a bee and missing. They say if you swat a bee, you got to hit it. You can't miss, because then now you got this pissed off bee coming after you. And there might be something to that with the Donald Trump situation, that it was like, hey, he felt like he was in the clear. And, you know, he was talking a lot of shit about how we're going to investigate the origins of the Russia collusion hoax. And
you really see how much Sessions fucked him over.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was the biggest missing link. All right. Now, wild question for you. Theoretically, let's say they get Donald Trump impeached.
Mm-hmm.
And now we also find out that Donald Trump was really trying to dig up some dirt on Clinton and Obama, and maybe even going to go after them for all the horseshit that they pulled. Do you think the next person that comes in power, maybe unprecedented, actually presses like charges against Trump for illegal activities while he was the president? Or they start really going after, you know, his whole... Because power is a big thing. It's really all about who's there and who's got the power.
Chuck Schumer said, I think he said this early in Donald Trump's presidency, but his quote was something along the lines of, he was like, you don't go after the intelligence community. He goes, they got six ways from Sunday to screw you. And I would not be surprised if Donald Trump ends up going down.
You mean because everybody else,
in one way or the other.
That's kind of the professional courtesy of this game, is that you don't go after the previous presidents and you don't go after the intelligence community, and everyone just plays ball with that. You can be in power, you can print your paychecks, you can get your good jobs afterwards. You just have to know what's off limits. And if you violate off limits, now you went to war with the people who have power.
Who have real deal power, like ungodly amounts of power. And so, I don't know, maybe Donald Trump will actually end up spending his days in a prison cell. I don't know. I don't think that's beyond the realm of possibility. But I also don't know that that's the most important, bigger question. You know, what ends up happening with Trump? Does Trump get reelected? Does Trump get charged? Does he get impeached? Does he get, you know, does he fucking go to jail? All these things are interesting questions. But I actually think the bigger, more important question for the country is, like, where do we go from here? You know, there's a weird thing about this whole game of democracy, which, you know, obviously, as people who listen to this show know, I'm no fan of democracy. I think it's
a god that failed.
Yes, I would say it was a god that failed.
That'd make a good book title.
Yeah, it would. Someone should write that. By the way, great book, if no one's read it. Hans Hermann Hoppe, Democracy, the God That Failed. To me, there's a lot of things I hate about democracy. I mean, I hate the concept of it. I hate, you know, two people voting to, you know, person A and person B voting to take away the rights of person C. I don't see that as being legitimate at all. And I hate that you can just whip up dumb people into a frenzy, which is what they blatantly do on all sides. But the thing that I probably hate the most about democracy is that it's the tool by which they legitimize, or at least attempt to legitimize, the ruling class. It's like, well, they were voted in, so this is government of the people. This is the whole game, right? And that this is what we do. So we have this democratic process, and then they can attempt to justify or legitimize any of the, you know, excesses of government because, well, this was the people voted, so government is the people and all this bullshit. But when you have this game and you're playing this game, democracy, it's a little bit dangerous to, when somebody like Donald Trump wins and then you just, the establishment just goes, nope, not doing his agenda. Sorry, you voted the wrong way. That's, you might be giving away your hand a little bit. So if Donald Trump comes in and you have these people, you know, look, there were still a lot of people, and in fact, more people who voted for Hillary Clinton. So it's not, it's a very divided country. I'm not saying everyone supported Donald Trump, but it wasn't like there were 1 million people or 2 million people who supported Donald Trump. There were 63 million people who supported Donald Trump, who voted for him, probably a lot more who supported him. And they went, we want these things. We want to control immigration. We want a wall. We want the jobs back. We want this and that and that. We want out of these wars. We want all the things that Donald Trump was talking about. And they've gotten none of that. And if that president just gets taken down, what does that do? So, I mean, this will be, if Donald Trump does get impeached and removed and even imprisoned, as you were talking about before, that will be the nail in the coffin to all of these people being removed from this system. They will never believe in this democracy illusion again. And that's interesting. Like, where does that go? How is this workable? How do we go back to anything, you know, any semblance of normalcy after that? I don't think we will. And so that's what I think is the bigger picture, which is what's really interesting. And I don't really know what the answer is, but it'll be fun to watch it play out. All right. Let's check in with the inner circle and see what brilliant comments we have from these wonderful people who are our supporting listeners. And guys, please don't make me feel like a dick for saying that now and ask a whole bunch of really dumbass shit, which I know is going to happen. All right, I posted in the Part of the Problem inner circle. I said, is there anything you guys want us to talk about today? And of course, the first response from Jonathan said, preferably wieners.
I'll talk about
that's
wieners.
That's what I got. That's what I got. All right. What do you got?
Well, first, do you think he's talking like hot dog wieners or like human wieners? I bet he wants to go human wieners.
That's what I assumed. Yeah. But I know you want to talk hot dog wieners.
Well, I don't love hot dogs that much. So I'd rather talk about human wieners.
You know, a hot dog. No, we're going hot dogs. A hot dog is in the right circumstance. Is great.
Like a ballpark?
Yeah. If you're at a baseball game, you got a hot dog. How do you like your hot dog? I like sauerkraut and mustard.
Hell yeah. And a spicy brown mustard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's solid.
I'm all about the sauerkraut.
Yeah. But it's all that is really, you realize it's like, it's really, I really don't like the hot dog.
Nah. It's just the sauerkraut.
There probably
mustard.
Could be a better meat that you'd put on that sandwich.
Yeah. You know what it is? Corn.
Oh,
beef.
Did I just call it a sandwich? I might never get back on Michael Malice's podcast.
Oh, why? He's very anti calling it a sandwich.
Well, it's one of his big questions. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
I was thinking about
this. And I say no. I do say no.
Well, I was thinking about this the other day. Let's say you took a hot dog roll and you filled it with tuna fish. What would you call that?
To me, that is a sandwich.
It's a tuna fish sandwich.
But not with a hot dog. A hot dog is not a sandwich. I think the point, I might be wrong about this, but to me, the point is that I know the answer is that a hot dog is not a sandwich, but I have no way of justifying that.
I think it's like the same way that taxation is theft, because technically it's theft, and then some people get upset about it. Hot dog just technically is a sandwich. Now it should be its own thing. It should be able to be in its own category.
Fuck, that's really hard.
But from a technical standpoint, fill a hot dog bun with anything else and tell me it's not a sandwich.
Okay. You know what? You've kind of won me over.
But anyways,
on this. That's the best argument I've ever heard.
Corned beef. That's the way to go.
Corned beef would be good with sour gratin
mustard. But I'm not talking like deli meat corned beef. I mean like a fresh corned beef.
Yeah.
You know, like when
delicious.
It's like chunky and shit.
I love it. In mustard, that's the best. Like corned beef and cabbage with some mustard.
Yeah.
There.
Or with
it.
Or like you hang out with some real Polish people and they get the kielbasa in there also.
Love that shit.
Fuck yeah.
Love it. Love it. I'm actually getting very hungry now after this conversation. Not even kidding around. I'm genuinely hungry. All right. Cody writes, the local 5K race IQ.
What the fuck does that mean?
I don't know. I think it's a play on the local 5K race and then the word IQ after a race. I don't know. Is that a thing that I'm supposed to know, the 5K race IQ? I don't know what you want me to talk about, running or race and IQ. What do you want me to talk about with race and IQ? Aren't there enough people who fucking cover this already? Why do you guys have to try to ruin my career? I don't know. Yeah. I personally, what I think about this, and I've actually consulted some people who I think are semi-experts in the field, who I know personally. I think that IQ science is very, very interesting. I think IQ is very predictive in as far as any like psychological trait that we know of. It does a pretty good job. And there are differences in the average IQ between different racial groups. There's no question about
that.
But
everybody's special. Like the black people have bigger penises. You wouldn't trade some of your IQ for a bigger penis?
You want to talk average penis size? You want to go that by race lines? Yeah. That being said, I guess one of the reasons why I don't focus on the race and IQ stuff that much is because, number one, I think it's a big unknown exactly how much environment factors into IQ. And I think that people who claim to know this, like they'll go like, well, that's 30% of IQ. I think this is bullshit.
But 30%
and they don't
massive.
Know. Yeah, even that
and
is.
That's the difference
it's
between
massive.
Isn't that the difference between 100 IQ and 130? And what's the difference between 100 and 130 in terms of...
It's enormous.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that I don't buy into the argument that other people who are libertarian ANCAP or lean in that direction I've talked about with race and IQ, that you need a high IQ society in order to have a libertarian order. I don't know that I think that's true. I mean, there are lots of high IQ societies that don't have a libertarian order. Certainly no low IQ societies have them. But I don't think that, you know, accepting the non-aggression principle and private property rights is something you need a 150 IQ in order to do. I do think that low IQ relationship with violent crime is a big problem, but the only way to deal with that from my perspective is to have violent crime be all that is illegal. And when you fuck around with all these other things that are illegal as well, you're never going to do a great job dealing with violent crime. And so anyway, I don't know. I don't know, you know, like talking about race and IQ, it's like I'm not an expert on the subject. And it's like, okay, so what are you suggesting we do? What do you do with that
information?
Put
the Asians in charge.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Ask a question, get an answer. There you go. I'm for Asian rulers now. No longer an anarchist. Okay. Sam asks, can you get Justin Amash on the show and straighten his head out? He used to be so good. I don't know. I've never attempted to get Justin Amash on the show. If he was down to do it, I'd be down to have him on, but I don't know. You got his number? You call him up. Tell him to come on. All right, guys, let's take a second to let you know about our sponsor for today's show, which is Infinite CBD. I love Infinite CBD. I personally have gotten a lot of benefit out of their Freezing Point topical cream, which is for pain relief. It also helps reduce inflammation. This stuff is like a lifesaver. It really helped me out with this pinched nerve that I have. I like really swear by this product. And I know a lot of people use Infinite CBD products for other things like insomnia, anxiety, depression, to wake up in the morning. They have the CBD AM pills that have caffeine and CBD. If you don't know, CBD is the non-psychoactive ingredient in marijuana. So it gives you all the benefits of marijuana without getting you high. It's the medicine, but not the recreational drug of marijuana. So it's really a miracle product. A lot of people have benefited from it. And Infinite CBD has the purest, cleanest stuff. So that's the place to go for it. So go to InfiniteCBD.com and use the promo code POTP15. That'll get you 15% off anything you order there. It's an unbelievable product, truly a miracle product, and there's a lot of ways that it can help you live a healthier, more enjoyable life. So once again, that's InfiniteCBD.com, promo code POTP15 for 15% off. All right, let's get back into the show. It just makes me wonder, I don't know, I talked to Mike Lee once at Kennedy. He was going on and we were in the green room for a few minutes, and I asked him immediately. I was like, what the fuck is Justin Amash doing with this stuff? Like, why? Like, doesn't he know about the NSA and all this crazy shit they did to Donald Trump? Shouldn't the libertarian be talking about how fucked up it is that the government's spying on? I mean, come on, like, from the libertarian perspective, even if you do think that, like, Donald Trump Donald Trump committed obstruction of justice or something like that, it's like, isn't the first thing you would be like, there was a guy, Donald Trump, before he was involved in the state at all, was just a guy who got he was a guy running for president who, the opposition leader, you know, the Barack Obama, used the fucking deep state to spy on him. How do we feel about that, libertarians? Not so great, right? So wouldn't you talk about that? And Mike Lee was, I think, more or less was kind of like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know why he's not seeing things that way. So I don't understand what's up with Justin Amash. I don't get it. But it's a shame because he does have a pretty good voting record, and I think he's blown a lot of his credibility. Drew writes, Robbie's battle with AIDS.
You know, it's been tough, but I'm staying in the game. I wake up every morning and I say, I'm not going to let this get me down. And,
there you go.
Luckily, it's just the occasional weekend where it flares up and I got to deal with it. But day to day, I kick that stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
look at that.
Yeah.
No, it's inspirational, deal. Really. Rob's taking it one day at a time. All right. Josh, asks, about Bernie Sanders' health issues. Would you say he doesn't have the heart to continue with the 2020 campaign? I see what you did there, Josh, and it was terrible.
Now, you know what it is? He's a fucking Jew to the very core, and he knew he was out of this thing, and he knew he was going to lose. So he's like, how do I get some sympathy in this game? I was too sick to continue, and I would have tried to help him, but then my heart gave out, and then he's going to be back to writing
you
his books.
You think so? You're calling it bullshit.
And I'm not saying it's bullshit. I'm saying to his very core, his innards, his very psychology is of the whiny Jew.
I'll tell you, they've suspended the campaign. I mean, or they've suspended his campaigning.
He wanted out.
Listen, maybe you're right. I think he's really sick. But this is...
I think sometimes people get cancer just because they're stressed out of their fucking mind and illness comes about.
Well, it's not cancer. He's got heart problems.
I think, certainly.
Look, Bernie Sanders, if you've ever watched Bernie Sanders before, right? Like, just watch a video of Bernie Sanders and then you just had to guess where his blood pressure is. I think you would guess elevated. Now, that's not exactly good medicine, but just saying, he's an older guy. This is a very stressful... undertaking, but there's something interesting about him getting out, because if he does get out, he's polling, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 20% right now.
It all goes to Warren.
You got to think way more of it's going to go to Warren than go to Biden. And that could be, you know, what buries Joe Biden. I mean, something's going to, but Biden is not coming out of this thing with the nomination, but this could be very, very bad news for Joe Biden. From Joe Biden's perspective, you'd much rather have two progressives who are challenging you and splitting the vote than have one of them go out and
but
the other one take
their...
But he
have a chance at a Elizabeth Warren cabinet position? Because you wouldn't put him on
Biden?
Any... Bernie. Because you Maybe. Wouldn't put him on any foreign stuff. That doesn't make sense.
No, he'd be like, minimum wage czar.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe. I doubt it, but maybe. Okay, Brian writes... in your experience as a former lefty, what's the biggest obstacle to converting leftists to liberty? What's the key to winning them over as they have such a religious-like view of the state? Also, I saw you drinking bourbon on the show a while back. I believe it was Bullet. Who got you turned on to drinking bourbon? I'm a bourbon enthusiast and fellow ANCAP from Kentucky. Okay, So let's do the first one first. What's the best way to convert former lefties? Well, you know, I find it interesting when people ask me, what's the best way to convert someone to libertarianism? And I'm not, you know, what the hell do I know? I mean, I guess, look, I have converted a decent amount of people over. But the thing that's strange about asking me how to convert people, if you listen to this show, is you already know what I think. This is how I've done it. This is how I've had success converting people over to libertarianism, just doing what I do and speaking about things the way I do. Much to my shock, I always thought, when I first became a libertarian, I thought that I was like, you know, Ron Paul and Tom Woods and guys like this are great at talking to people on the right just by the nature of who they are. They're very, like, you know, socially conservative people. They're family men. They're Christians. They come from kind of right wing, you know, backgrounds. So they'll be great at that. And I'd be better at talking to people on the left because I come from a left wing background. And I, you know, at the time was really like a degenerate and, you know, like, that's who I could fucking talk to. But I've actually been surprised that I've probably converted far more people from the right than the left. I didn't think that was the way it was going to go, but it has. I don't know exactly what conclusion to draw from that, but it's an interesting piece of information that far more people who tell me I introduced them to the ideas of liberty and brought them, you know, like helped turn them into a libertarian, come from the right than the left. So I don't know. But I'll say this, that I always, and it's the Scott Horton advice, I always think you attack the left from the left, you attack the right from the right. So if you're going to talk to people on the left, you want to talk to them about issues that they care about. And it's like, look, if you want to poke holes in the status thing, poke holes in it. Ask them questions about it. Why? You know, that's what I try to do. I always try to not come from a place where you're robbing people of their identity. You almost want to make it like, no, this is just more consistent with your identity. And there's something beautiful about being a libertarian and just believing in freedom that you can do that with just about everybody. Because almost everybody, at their core, is arguing for freedom. They may not know it, and they may have a different understanding of freedom than we do, but usually what they're arguing for, I mean, even people like, right, like Ben Burgess, is basically arguing for all these government programs so that we can then go be free. That's kind of what he's arguing for. So once you kind of get them at all on that same wavelength, then you can go for it. And for people on the left, talk about how evil the state has been throughout history by their own stated goals. You know, if your goal is like racial equality or being against racism or something like that, it's like, okay, well, what has the state done in that whole business? What has the state done? You know, who's building the prisons? Who's bombing the brown people? You know, I don't know. That's the best I can do. All right.
You got to tell them about the bourbons. It's actually fake news. I think we were drinking the rye.
Oh, yeah, the bourbons.
And if you're drinking bourbon, we like Makers.
I love a good Makers. That's right. We were drinking the bullet rye. I love a bullet rye. I like the bullet bourbon, too, but I prefer the rye. I've always been a whiskey guy. For a long time. So I was like, I love a beer and a whiskey. I don't know. Who turned me on to that? I don't think anyone turned me on to that. It was like, Brian. Brian gets all the credit. I don't know if you turned me on to it, but Brian used to be the bartender at the Creek in the Cave when Skanks worked there. So he certainly served me a good amount of it in his past life. I don't know.
Yeah,
all my friends, we all used to like, when I was like, you know, like 18, 19, we all used to drink Jack Daniels and shit like that. So it was always like, you know, whiskey. And then I just graduated to drinking better whiskey over the years. But I love a good Makers and I love a bullet. Love the bullet rye. Excellent. Mwah. All right. How about you? You love bourbon. And no one, did anyone turn you on to it?
What, bourbon? I don't know. I drink everything, but I definitely like my ryes. But I'm different than you. You like you love a shot in a beer.
Love a shot in a beer.
Yeah, you love a shot in a beer.
Well, there's just something about the feeling of a shot in a beer. It's just excellent.
I don't throw down shots too often, but I'll definitely... I like a rye on the rocks. I like Makers on the rocks a lot, but I really mix up what I drink.
I like to sip Maker's on
the rocks. Drink gin and seltzer at home. I'll drink vodka Red Bulls some nights. Like, I really...
Gin and seltzer. That I wouldn't do. Vodka, great. I don't like vodka, but if that's, like, what somebody has
vodka,
or something, vodka,
such as vodka seltzer, vodka with some oat. Like, you can just mix up some vodka.
What I won't drink...
Vodka's better for daytime drinking.
I won't drink tequila.
I'll drink tequila.
I won't drink, like, rum. That should I
used to drink rum in high school.
Yeah,
I used
me
to
too.
Drink a lot
Everyone
of rum
in Bacardi
high school.
In high
yeah, because it was
yeah.
that because it was already yeah. flavored. Oh, those were the best. Going to a concert and just drinking one of like those small rums.
Yeah, but
I used to love those.
It literally, I drank it in high school. I drank Bacardi in high school and shit, and now it literally
the thought of it
makes my soul quiver.
The raspberry flavored Bacardi on a cup of ice. Oh man,
Jesus, God damn it, that's terrible. Okay. Mike writes, what's the best way to knock down the socialism like the Nordic countries argument that the left uses? I go,
those are all pretty people, and so they're going to get along, and they're happy to share because they all look good.
Well, okay.
You try sharing your stuff with ugly people, it's not going
to
work out.
There's something to that. And he says, I go round for round with lefties about this and how, quote, happiness is subjective. Yeah, because that's the thing where they'll claim
they're
like the happiest countries.
That's why. It's got nothing to do with the socialism. They're all hot. They're all having sex with other hot people.
It is.
What's to be upset about?
It is. Look, there's something... let's go first with the socialism aspect. Well, it is fine to point out that none of these countries identify as socialist countries. In fact, they're not socialist countries. They rank right around the U.S. in the Freedom Index. And so that's one thing to start with. It's a little bit of a difficult argument to make, but the truth is that most of these countries started as very free market countries, much like America, where the government grew bigger and bigger. They instituted a lot of social democrat policies, and some, you know, democratic socialists got power. And that has had nothing but bad effects on their economy. And a lot of them, particularly Sweden and Denmark, have been rolling back some of their social programs because it's gotten too crazy. And you can also talk about the tax rates they pay and things like that. But, in many ways, this is the last stand of the democratic socialist arguments, because they can't point to any true socialist countries because they've all been disasters. So now they go, nah, we're just like the Nordic countries. I got to say, it's usually not my go-to, but I did think that one time, I don't know if you ever saw that clip of Gavin McGinnis on his old podcast. It was Free Speech, I think was what he called it. There's the one that I did it way back in the day. It was the first time I met Gavin, actually, when he was doing it at Stand Up Labs. But what he said, which I thought was really funny, just a really funny way to go at a leftist. But he was like, why do you have to go to the most densely white areas of the world to find the best society? I mean, you're all about this whole like multiculturalism and, you know, like all this like stuff. So why is your, you know, ideal country Norway? Seems a little strange that's the one that you look to. Do you ever see the clip? You know the one I'm talking about?
No, but
this woman
good.
Was talking about how, you know, terrible white people are, this leftist woman.
Yeah.
And he was like, why do you hate white people? And she goes, I don't hate white people. I just think white people need to take responsibility for the societies that they've created. And Gavin goes, you mean the best society? So we have to take credit for the best societies? And she goes, we do not live in the best society. And he goes, okay, so what are the best societies? And she goes, well, there's many European societies that are better than us. And he goes, you're talking about the Nordic countries? And she was like, well, I don't know. And he goes, you mean the even more densely white societies than the one we live in right now? And she goes, well, I don't know if I look at it that way. And he goes, well, what are you talking about? You're not talking about Turkey. I mean, you're not sort of right. Like, what European countries are you talking about? Anyway, so maybe that's one area. I would say if you want some juice on this, Tom Woods wrote a great ebook on the subject. Bernie Sanders is Wrong, I believe is the title. And they go through each Nordic country. And there's a lot of really good information there. Okay, we're running up against the end of it. This is going to be a little bit of a shorter episode.
I'm into
I apologize.
It.
Jim asked, does Greg Gutfeld do coke before or during the show?
I don't know, but I heard he blasts a lot of farts on air.
No farts on air when I was there.
That's what I've heard about the guy.
Well,
he just blasts a lot of farts.
I can tell you, listen, I can confirm that Greg Gutfeld did not do any coke during the show while I was there and did not let out any audible farts while I was there.
I haven't heard
what he was doing before the show happened. I don't know. You got to talk to Greg about that. I can't, but I will tell you, I got a fucking really good...
But he's high energy the whole time. Coke's not a slow burn. If someone's doing coke before a show, they're going to be up, up, up for about 5 minutes, and then they're going to suck.
Yeah, no, so, he's good. He's good the whole show.
Yeah, so...
So I guess what Robbie's trying to say is Greg did a lot of coke before
the show. No, probably Adderall or something a little more even burning.
The better, the new coke.
Yeah.
I will say this. I got a great response from doing that show. Got a lot of, like, followers on Twitter off of it, and a lot of people, like, you know, commenting at me and stuff like that. They liked it. The show's doing really well. It's like a couple million people watching that show. So it was a lot of fun to do. They did edit my stuff heavily, which really bugged me because I said some great shit that got cut out. I just listened to it last night. I had DVR'd it and I hadn't watched it yet. And I just watched it and put it on and I was like, oh, these motherfuckers, all this stuff that I said gets cut out. So, you know, but I guess they got enough good
stuff. When are they going to bring back the old Red Eye so I can get on Fox News and just say dumb shit?
Dude, I would
platform
love,
for,
I would
know.
Love to get the old Red Eye. I fucking wish Red Eye was back on Fox News. That
How
was
many
a
times
lot of fun.
Would you say you did Red Eye?
A lot.
Yeah.
I would do Red Eye like a couple times.
Because they had comics on a bunch.
Yeah. Oh, I did Red Eye a lot. Once they had me on, they just started using me like all the time. It's like, I don't know, like tons and tons of times I did that show. It was a lot of fun. I missed that run. Red Eye was a fun time. It was real, real shame when,
but now happened. He makes that middle of the day money.
Okay. Josh writes, listen to Andrew Yang on Eric Weinstein's show and wondering how in the fuck these guys seem to be so smart, both seem open to new ideas, but neither realizes that their version of quote helping perpetuates more violence than any other cause in history.
Well, they're Juchinks. What can you expect?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Juchink's gonna Juchink. Look,
I really
man,
made sure I can.
Yeah. Oh,
I said some fucked up one.
You're never gonna get on Fox News' Red Eye. No, if I'm any indication, you could say a lot of wild shit and still get on Fox News, but we're never getting Saturday Night Live. I'll say, the idea of, like, how can smart people get things so wrong is a very interesting, you know, question. But if you really look at history, smart people, really, really smart people, far smarter than me, far smarter than you, have gotten a lot of things really, really wrong. And there might be a relation, like, between intelligence and understanding truth. But it's not a direct correlation. There are really, really brilliant people who do some evil fucking shit and get things all types of wrong. And, you know, like, it seems to me that a lot of times when you're drawing conclusions, like logically trying to arrive at conclusions, if a few of your givens are wrong, you can go in a really crazy wrong direction. And a lot of times what it is that people aren't questioning the very basic assumptions that they're drawing all of this on. So if you just, like, look, if you just take two things as a given, I give you two givens right now, all right? It's a given that government exists and government is here to help people, and that's, like, obviously that's the way we need to organize society. And then it's a given that that automation and technology is about to put millions of people out of work. If you just take those two givens, and then you're a really, really smart person, now go down this logical train, you might get to UBI and, like, really supporting it. And, you know, like, I think
cranberry helps for that, right?
Huh?
Cranberry juice?
Oh, yeah. Well, it won't cure it, but it'll help.
Okay.
It'll manage the symptoms. But so that's it's UTI, by the way, not a UBI, but very similar.
No, the Asians, they pronounce
both
letters weird. So.
Both things you want to avoid. But so you could be a very smart person and go down this whole, like, train of thought that's just kind of flawed because you're not questioning the presuppositions. You're not questioning the foundation that this whole logical train of thought rests on. And so I think what ANCAP's, like, question is, like, well, first off, what is the nature of the state? Why does this whole thing need to exist? And second, where are we actually, like, how do we actually know that technical innovation is going to be a net economic negative, even if it does have this creative destructive effect where it puts a lot of people out of work? Why, like, we've seen this happen before, and every single time huge new industries are created and the standard of living rises. So that's the stuff that I think they're not looking
think
at.
Andrew
I didn't
Yang,
listen to the podcast, though.
You think he even really believes in universal basic income? Or he just
know.
Thought... He did some bad polling and said, hey, I think that just giving people cash is going to be more popular than it is, and I think I can make a run with this.
I have no fucking idea. He's an interesting guy, and I when I don't know, I try to not assume bad motives. So I'll just work under the assumption that he believes what he's saying. There's certain people who have, they've given me reason. Like, I don't believe Hillary Clinton believes what she says. But I don't know. I really don't know, to be honest. It's an interesting question. Who the fuck knows? Who can get inside this guy's head? But I will say that he is, I think, is wrong. So if he does really believe it, he's fucking, he's, look.
It's not just wrong. It just equates to instant inflation. That $1,000.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That it's probably going to be destructive. But
it really
I also
won't do
think,
anything for you.
Look, he needs to address like creative destruction, and he never seems to get around to that. So that would be my major problem with him. Okay, let's do one more and then we got to wrap. Chris writes, the difference between big L and small L libertarians, and why, even though you may be technically pure and correct, knocking Gary Johnson, Sarwak et al., and insisting on purity tests will do nothing but ensure the LP remains obscure, debate club rather than a vessel for promoting, instituting principles of liberty in mainstream politics. Well, the difference between a big L libertarian or a small L libertarian, which I am technically both at this point, right, is that the big L refers to being a part of the party, and the small L refers to believing in the philosophy. So I am primarily a small L libertarian. I'm here because I believe in something, and I joined the party because I was convinced by Michael Heiss and the Mises Caucus guys and the Meekawks that it was not a bad idea. And just looking at the current political dynamic, it seems like, oh yeah, we do have the third party with ballot access on 50 states that calls itself libertarian. That might be useful. That there's an opportunity there. And given that Donald Trump kind of took over the Republican Party, I don't see a Ron Paul type figure, or like if Rand Paul were to really get his shit together and run a good campaign, that's not going to happen for years now. So maybe that's the best game in town. It was after Rand Paul's campaign fell apart that I started going, well, what are our other options here? And started looking with some interest at the Libertarian Party. And then it wasn't until Michael Heiss and those guys came around that I was interested in signing up. Now, obviously, I mean, I don't know. Look, I've talked about this a lot on recent podcasts, so I don't know what, you know, exactly the point is. But if you're saying I might be technically pure and correct, but knocking Gary Johnson and Sarwak and all these things, is it's going to make the LP an obscure debate club rather than a vessel for promoting and instituting principles of liberty in mainstream politics. Well, I don't know. I disagree with that. I actually think if they ran some good libertarians who can inspire people, then they could be promoting liberty in the mainstream politics. Listen, nothing's kept the LP being more irrelevant than Gary Johnson and them being there. That's the truth. And they can say they got a few million votes. Like, okay, what has that done for the liberty movement? Precisely nothing. The most disingenuous part of the debate that I had with Nick Sarwak, and I, you know, it's hard in those debates because you have limited time and there's only so many things you could get to. But at one point, he started talking about the votes that Ron Paul got in 1988 when he was the LP nominee compared to the votes that Gary Johnson got in 2016, and goes, look, Gary Johnson got more votes Therefore, we know that Gary Johnson is worth more than Ron Paul. And then he borrowed Ben Shapiro's dumbass line and said, yeah, Dave, these are the facts, and the facts don't care about your feelings. And, you know, I pointed out, I just responded to it quickly and said, you know, like, yeah, of course he got more votes. He inherited the Ron Paul movement of 2008 and 2012. Look, guys, I mean, does anyone really debate that Ron Paul's the guy who mainstreamed the idea of libertarianism? So, yes, like, people know what a libertarian is now. They're familiar with it. So he got a lot of that, a lot of those people. And the other main reason why he got more votes is because he was running against Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and he was the next name on the list. A lot of people just went, well, fuck those two. I'll go with this guy. So he got votes from the libertarians that existed because of Ron Paul and a whole bunch of people who don't care about libertarianism at all, but just didn't like the other two. So that's the dynamic. But to compare his votes to Ron Paul's votes in 1988, it's like, well, yeah, first of all, the population was much smaller in 1988. So there's not a direct comparison in number of votes. Also, it was before the internet. So, like, yeah, if you weren't part of the two-party system, there was no way to reach people. There was no way to communicate. I mean, like, this is all so obvious. But I believe if we want to actually influence mainstream politics, then you'd have to run a candidate who actually makes people question the whole two-party system and not just go, well, I'm the other name on a box, and I'm some weirdo who sticks his tongue out and gets high and doesn't remember things. That's not, you know, I don't think that's going to help anything at all. All right, we're going to wrap up there. Thank you guys for listening. Go check out Run Your Mouth, Rob Bernstein's podcast. Follow him on Twitter, at RobbieTheFire. You can follow me on Twitter, at ComicDaveSmith. If you listen to the show and you don't follow us on Twitter, you know, and you're on Twitter, well, stop being an asshole.
Shame follow on us. You.
And don't forget, come check me out at the Paley Center. Go to paleycenter.org, and you can get tickets for that. It is, by the way, I think I forgot to mention the show, but what is it? It's November 25th is the date. It's November 25th at 6:30 p.m. At the Paley Center. So make sure you come check that out. And tickets are on sale as of, they're on sale. Tickets are on sale. Tickets are on sale now. So go to paleycenter.org and come out there and support me as I battle with these lefty comedians. And we'll see what ends up happening there. Okay, thanks for listening. Bye.